Jack Mala. Welcome again to another episode of Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo. This one is Season 1, Episode 3. And oh, my friends, I am 8th Dan, Stan Adu, at your service. I am joined, as always, by my good buddy Jim. How you doing, Jim?
I'm happy to be here, Stan. I'm really excited. This is a classic VHS era movie here.
Oh, you know it. All right, Jack Owl's in the house.
Stan, sup?
Yo.
What's that? What is it that you scream at the beginning there?
Oh, Yakmala?
Yeah, what the hell is that?
Oh, that's great, because that's taken directly from Jim Cotta. That's what the king of Parmistan says when he's addressing his people. So I like to think of myself as the king of Parmistan addressing my people right now. Yakmala. Yakmala. All
Yakmala, right. Yakmala, back to you, Stan.
Woohoo! Nick Boxer, how's it going?
Greetings and salutations. That's very cheesy of you. I don't know. There's some Parmesan joke in there somewhere.
Lots of Parmesan.
Oh, I see what he did there. I got it.
All right. Well, Brad is not joining us again. Once again, he is missing. So we are just going to keep on going without him. But you know, we'll wish him the best and hope that he comes back next week. Okay. So this is episode 3, and we have a classic ready for us. This is the 1980s. You know, we're going back where the point where all the movies, it seemed like, everything was just ninja this, ninja that. And so I'm really excited to announce that we're doing American Ninja, Michael Dudikoff action for us today. So I'm really itching to get into it. So tell me now, Nick, why don't you give me the rundown on this movie?
Oh, I would
or answer the phone.
Yeah, no, if you could. I was going to say, we've got our first caller.
Yeah.
I didn't know it was a call-in show, but,
our phone lines are open.
Yeah, they're always open. 8th Dan Stan, ready to take your calls. Apparently, they're not willing to hang up either. Oh.
Come on. There are nine other people in this house. Why can't somebody else answer the phone?
It's literally the last landline left in the Western world. there's no answering machine attached to it.
My apologies. Nick, technical difficulties. No. Why don't I tell you about American Ninja?
Please.
I have no idea what happened in this movie. I watched it twice.
You're dedicated.
And yes. I have no idea. I am pretty sure there's an amnesiac ninja involved named Joe who gets the opposite results to any action that you would expect. If you beat up a guy, he becomes your best friend. If you save a guy's daughter, he wants to kill you in the next scene. There's some bullshit that happens with some arms dealers, but none of it makes any sense. I'm not even sure there's nothing coherent about this movie. I was so confused throughout the entire thing, yet it was so simple that I let it go a little bit. I enjoyed some of it, but my God. Oh, I wondered if do you guys think there was a script to this thing? Or do they just make it up day to day?
I like to think it's more of an improv.
it would explain some of the acting, that's for sure.
God, I love this movie. Oh, I love this movie so much. this movie is if James Dean had lived long enough to make a ninja movie. That's what this movie is.
Oh man, he is just, it's like Michael Dudikoff spends the entire movie just brooding.
Everything about it is textbook James Dean.
It's like, I'm so unhappy, but I'm so sexy and ninja-y. "Oh, but I'm really unhappy."
I'm gonna look down, but then my eyes are gonna look up at the same time, and then I tilt my chin because I'm the American Ninja.
Now, acting. I think it was fairly clear throughout the film that, you know, the bad guys were the bad guys. But did anyone else find themselves just hating Joe, our star, the guy we're supposed to like? From the first scene, I'm thinking, this guy's an asshole.
No, that is pretty fair. I mean, it does take you a long time, I think, to actually get to the point where Joe is kind of like, "Oh, okay, I'm down with Joe now," but he's kind of a douchebag for a lot of it.
I mean, he can't even like throw back the hacky sack that the happy-go-lucky idiot guy like lost. No, he's just gonna stand there playing with his switchblade knife.
I'll be honest, man.
Butterfly knife, but...
That is when I started liking him, because I fucking hate hacky sack. That is me. Every time someone says, "You want to play hacky sack?" and they kick it at me, I'm like, "God, no, I'm playing with my knife."
Oh, yeah, but, I mean, he doesn't respond. He just stares off in space. I actually was wondering if it caused him physical pain throughout this movie to talk. Because every time he said a line, it was like he had to go through not the facial movements of Khan, but the emotional struggle to get words out that Khan had to do like kung fu. There was a lot of like pent up energy behind every word that was like forced to like peek through his lips.
The real question that I have is, like, how many of us suffered physical pain every time we talked? It's like, whoa, I'm sure by the time he's in American Ninja, you know, 8, then he's really got a hold on that performance.
He only did... There's actually an American Ninja franchise. So this ran 4 films. Five films.
He's in 4 of them.
He's
not in part 4. He's in part 5 again.
That's right. Yeah, they introduce a new American Ninja in part 4, and then the two of them team up in part 5. But he's in like 5
I believe
minutes
they introduced a new. I believe that guy was actually introduced in part 3.
Is he? So, oh, there's some overlap.
There's stuff going on.
Passing of the torch. The American Ninja legacy, as it were.
See, and you guys, I gotta say, you guys had a way different reaction to this movie than me. Like, Michael Dudikoff was an accomplished actor before he got this. Didn't know martial arts at all. Some of my facts of fury. He since went on to become a black belt in karate and jujitsu. He studied and aikido and these things. But he didn't know any martial arts going into this. He was an established actor. He was the very first ever boyfriend of the Joni character in Happy Days.
No way.
Yeah, he was. And he was one of Tom Hanks' friends in his group of pals in the hit movie Bachelor Party. So, and mainly known for comedic roles. As an actor, I thought he was way above what we usually get for the genre. I didn't have any problems with this performance and the things. I mean, obviously they're making him play it. He was actually cast because Men in Golem called him a James Dean type, and was marketed early in his career as a Dean McQueen, a cross between Dean McQueen and Dean, or James Dean and Steve McQueen. So, but yeah, I mean, I did not have that same reaction. In fact, I didn't have the same reaction in general to this movie that you guys apparently did.
I was gonna jump in because I wanted Nick to have his words. We do talk about on this show about not being a review show, though. This is about celebrating schlock and cheese and heart. So this movie genuinely is one of my favorite VHS era movies. I rented this a lot as a kid, and it's probably he's basically like a G.I. Joe character. Like, I mean, it came out that same time I would have been playing with G.I. Joe figures. He's like a Snake Eyes character without a mask.
Yeah, if they could have gotten a hold of him and stuck him in there, I'll bet you they totally would have, and he would have fit right in. There's no doubt about that.
And maybe that's my problem with it, is it doesn't, it wasn't as unintentionally funny as some of the other ones. It didn't have that same stuff for me. I was like, this was as good a movie as they could make on a low budget movie. It's not a bad action movie for the genre. So it's one as a kid I would have watched, but as somebody who wants to celebrate this stuff here, I don't see as much out of it personally.
See, to me, one of the things that really stands out about this movie, and I think it's really important for me, and I think it goes a lot to what Jim's saying, is that it's so 80s. You know, in the 80s, you were really able to get these action movies that just felt like they could be, you know, I mean, it was done for like $1 million, and it felt like you could easily pull something out. You could hire a guy like Michael Dudikoff, teach him martial arts, and it's amazing, because I think he learned it so much better than Cabot from Jim Gianna.
Oh, no question.
But, you know, you were able to do these silly, like, American Ninja movies and stuff like that, and people would go out there and find them, and it was so much fun to see them. Whereas it feels like now this kind of niche genre just doesn't exist anymore.
Well, and this is where the fact that we don't have a canon films anymore, it's like the world is so much worse off that even, like, because, I mean, I enjoyed this film, but more as actually, I think it wasn't a bad film. This is a pretty good action movie. This is an 80s action movie. That's not, yeah. It's not a poor level 80s action movie. You know, it's also not crazy. Like, Gymkhana was insane, and it doesn't have the level of insane other than the costumes the ninjas wear. That was insane. But yellow, bright yellow. Who's like, oh man, I'm going to sneak up on this guy in bright yellow. Like, you know,
I love that some of the ninjas were in red, some of them were in yellow, and there didn't seem to be a reason for the
purple. We had some purple, we had some orange, like no reason. Like, that part I don't get. But yeah, as far as like, yeah, I mean, I'm like, this is a good 80s action film. So, and I mean, it made $10 million at the box office. Like you say, it was in the box office, made $10 million. That's the thing about it, is it's too high quality for me to go to celebrate the crazy in the way that I want to, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think one of the things, and I think, you know, Nick alluded to it earlier, is this idea that it is a pretty good movie for what it is, but there's so much stuff that's really like, when you really stop to think about it, it stops making any level of sense. Where it's just like, wow. So, okay, so the colonel and the army base on the island. And that's okay, I've seen army bases on the island. I don't know what island this is. But why does the colonel get to live in a mansion? And everybody else is like stuck on the army
base. Because he's
okay.
Corrupt.
I also found myself wondering, okay, if the bad guys get away with this stuff, is it that bad?
Well,
because I didn't like Joe at all, and I'm like, yeah, okay, so we got like an extra couple they steal a couple guns from the military, you know, take them out of Trump's hands or whatever, like. Not that bad.
Yeah. No, here's one of the ones I'd like to know. Maybe you can explain this to me. Okay, so at the beginning, the colonel, his daughter is being escorted by, you know, 400 people for some reason. And
I was really, you know, wondering about that part.
The army. well, because then, it's obvious that this is the colonel's private army.
Geez, that made sense to me. She was just part of the convoy.
Okay, she's part of the convoy, so she's being escorted, and she's about to get kidnapped by a bunch of people that are his. Like, why didn't he just give them to her? Like, that's his daughter. If he wants them to have her, and since he's actually in charge of them, why doesn't he just?
Wait, was the kidnapping actually the plan? I thought they were just trying to steal. I think they were just trying to steal some, like, stuff from the trucks, and the kidnapping just happened because, well, she tried to take off in the car.
So that was my other question, was if you're going to sit there and you know, you're a bunch of like are mercenaries and you're going to attack somebody and you're like, let's get an easy mark. Hey, how about 20 highly trained and armed soldiers?
Maybe, you know, yeah, maybe but I'm those soldiers were inept.
Maybe I'm starting to see it as we talk about it. But, you know, what I missed earlier.
The thing that I wonder is like, you know, because at the beginning of the movie, you don't know that the colonel is on the payroll. And so I think that as you're watching it and you start looking at it, and you're like, okay, so he's got a weapons shipment that his daughter is joining the convoy of for no good reason. And they're on an island. Where is he sending the weapons to and why?
And why is he sending these? And if you know the convoy is going to be robbed, why would you send your daughter along with?
Actually, yeah.
And I get, because they don't know that Joe is like awesome mega American ninja guy, but
Joe doesn't know that at this point.
Yeah. Well, I'm unclear about that, because I get what you're saying about how like he seems to have amnesia, but does he? Because about halfway through the movie, like he finds his old master, but he isn't surprised by that. It's not like all these memories flood back. He actually just remembers it. I don't think he does have an amnesia. He just acts like it.
I don't think he acts surprised about anything in the movie. But
okay, so there's one section of this movie that I actually see in quite a few of these types of movies. So it's not isolated to American Ninja, but because we're talking about American Ninja, that's why I'm bringing it up. Okay, there's a scene where the bad guy of the film, who is I guess some sort of gun runner or drug smuggler or bad guy. He's a generic bad guy, and
Victor Ortega.
He has a squad of ninjas that have their ninja master, the only master of ninjutsu in whatever island they're on.
And the tattoo on his face.
Yeah.
Yes. The black star ninja.
Yes. Yep. And they make a point of him being the only ninja that trains outside of Japan or something like that. Okay, so they want to demonstrate how good this ninja squad is. So they send six of their ninjas against the master, and then the master kicks all of their asses and kills one of them. What exactly did they demonstrate other than all that six of these guys can't take out one person? And they killed the guy who they just spent an enormous amount of time training.
Well, it's just to go to show that they're, you know, that they don't care about killing. They are willing to. They don't suffer failure at all, and that they obviously have a never-ending supply of ninja fire.
Is that maybe what they're demonstrating? Is like not that they're valuable or good in any way, just that they have a lot of them.
Here's what I want to know. By the way, they're in the Philippines. That's where this takes place.
Right.
I think that's where they actually were filmed it too, but it is in the Philippines. That's the location of the story in the movie. When they start off, and like I say, all these people show up to rob the soldiers for something. We don't know what they're robbing them for. Why not start with the ninjas? Why send out the people? Like, if you got ninjas, you don't start. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, because they started with the schlub.
A bunch of untrained guys with some weapons. It's like. And then they get their ass kicked, and then you have to bring out the ninjas. Just start with the ninjas.
Maybe the one ninjas were supposed to be secret, like they were holding them in reserve.
They're wearing orange. Ninjas are wearing bright yellow. It's not a subtle color of yellow. This is, if you were to take the sun and make it a piece of clothing, this was the yellow they were wearing. Okay.
Did G.I. Joe have a ninja that was dressed in yellow? I feel like they did. They were one dressed in red. I just feel like they had one in yellow too.
there might have been in like
wasn't
a.
Was there a ninja squad or something? They were all bright colors. Yes.
There was a ninja squad. The only one I remember was Jinx, and I think she was in purple.
She was in red. She was in red. Okay. I feel like there was a yellow ninja though. Like I think it feels like there's like a multi pack, but it would have been later, which means it was inspired by American Ninja.
But there you go.
A lot of things weren't inspired by the American Ninja. That much
as they should have been in that regard. I think that my absolute favorite part, and I don't know if I should save it for the scoring, but
yeah, let's get to the scoring.
Jump ahead to the scoring. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a rating system that is based on enjoyment rather than any kind of objective quality, because really, if you're approaching a movie like American Ninja for objective quality, go home, Ebert. you're drunk. You're cut off. So we have five categories that we rate the movies on. We each give a rating out of 10. Those are tallied up in the octagon scorecard, and we will keep a running total as we search for the ultimate B movie. So our first category is called schlock appeal. So this is the goofiness, the silliness, the schlock of the movie. We're going to start with Stan.
All right, I gave schlock appeal for American Ninja 6. It isn't my favorite of the movies that we've covered so far, but I do love a lot of the moments. And you know, the more that you talk about it, the more that you're able to bring out some of the schlock. But as you mentioned earlier, Jim, compounds where they train ninjas—that's always a good time.
All right, Nick, let's get your score for schlock appeal.
All right, I'm going with a 5. For the ninja training camp and the nonsensical motorcycle jumping sequence.
that was awesome. Just because it was just like, leading into that moment was insanity by itself. Like, oh, she wants to see him, and this is the way they decided to do it. But it's just like, oh, sure, I'm gonna take this motorcycle. I don't need a door. I'll just jump it over the wall, because thankfully they've stacked enough stuff that it's like a motorcycle.
They've stacked it in ramp shape too. Like the...
really like good. What, like one does. Really good. Yeah. yes. That's like most army bases, I'm sure.
What's the most efficient way to stack this? I don't know. I think a triangle.
A triangle, just put it up against the wall so somebody could walk up to the wall. In case.
Should it be like an isosceles? No, right angle against the wall.
Yes. if we're ever under siege, we would like to be able to run up this.
Actually, I'd like to go higher than I did, but on a whole, I have to... the sheer randomness of a lot of the stuff, it bugs me more than... it hampered my enjoyment of the schlock, so...
It would be really interesting if we, because these are all, you know, in my case especially, these are points that I tallied up after watching the movie. I would almost love to score it twice, you know, where it's just like, this is after watching the movie, this is after talking about it with you guys, because my enjoyment always skyrockets after talking about it with you guys.
All right, Jack, let's get your schlock appeal number.
All right, well, it's a canon film. And so canon films, by their nature, the lowest schlock appeal they're capable of getting is a 4.
I think you're right there, yeah.
Yeah, and so I give this a 5. Because it's definitely not, like, it doesn't have the schlock of the previous two competitors, Simkata and King of the Kickboxer, as far as there's nobody gritting like they need to take a shit for the whole thing. And there's no town of crazies. There's none of that. So it doesn't have that same schlock appeal. So it's a 5. It's got some because it's canon.
All right. Well, because of the ninja school and the completely random use of a helicopter in the final scene, which exists for no good reason, I think only just because they had the budget to blow it up, I also went with a 6 with this one. And I think there's a bit of nostalgia in there too. It is driven by my VHS era renting for sure. So the next category we call more heart than budget. So this is the way that that the filmmakers used what they had to really stretch and make the best movie or the most interesting movie they could with what they had.
Well, you know, it's interesting because Jack's brought up canon films. And so I think to me, like, canon films don't necessarily exhibit a lot of heart in that regard, so I gave it a 2. Ooh. But there are some good moments. But you know, one thing that I really got out of this was it felt like I was watching a TV show. It was almost like I was watching the A-Team. Like, even on just the quality of the film, it was, and the way that all the people were not quite dying and stuff like that, it was like, oh, is this the A-Team? You know, maybe if it had like a Bamboo Thunderdome. Yeah. Then
I gotta jump in with the facts of Fury here, because you say that people not dying. What do you think the body count was for this film? I'll get each of you to guess.
I'm gonna say 100.
Price is right. It's probably got to be pretty high. It's like 40.
You got 40. You say 100 there, Jim?
Yep.
Okay.
I'm going with 68.
Okay, 114.
Nice.
The body count on this film. Now, the amount of squibs used, 0. Because like he drives by and shoots like 30 people, and they all like, you know, shake like they're being shot by these people, and no blood at all. And that is kind of, you're right. I mean,
it's like they were shooting for a G rating on it.
Yeah, it almost could have been, a PG-13. Definitely. I mean, it would have been R for a little bit for language, but it could have been pretty close.
Yeah, I mean, very, very, just the way it felt when I started watching it in like the first 15 minutes. That was kind of what brought it all home for me.
Nick's turn here.
Yeah, I'm going with 3. They had a lot of crazy stuff, but they just sort of, they threw their entire budget at the wall and just saw what stuck. It's not like they had to, like, you know, let's save that bit of budget to make a huge ass cage fight at the end, or they just did stuff because they could do stuff. And
it's what all of us want, is a big fucking Bamboo Thunderdome.
That's name of my first album, Bamboo Thunderdome, right there.
All right. Well, I I think they did a lot with the budget. Okay, there's like they blew up a helicopter. Looked cool. They did that. There's a really cool, you know, the chase on the motorcycle scene that goes on for quite a while, and then the guy ends up getting underneath the Jeep and crawling underneath it and coming up, and it was like all really good stunt work, and it looked really good. It looked like a good, like, budget. Like, I don't think that if a lot of people watch this, that and he said, well, it was filmed in the 80s, they would probably not think it's as low budget as it is. So I gave a 6 here. You know, I mean, if they had, and originally Chuck Norris was the guy that they were going to put in this, and he's not in it because he didn't want to cover his face. Because, of course, he has to wear the American Ninja, you know, he has to wear a ninja thing. And Chuck Norris is like, well, if I'm in a movie, I want people to see my face. So he refused to be in it. If you had added him, just the presence of him adds like another feeling of this film must have cost at least $1 million more. So if it had been him, they could have gotten up to like a 9. But I still give it a 6.
Did Joe actually cover his face in more than one scene?
Nope. It's Chuck just Norris.
Two scenes maybe in the whole thing. Like,
but he did.
Yeah.
Too much for Chuck.
But he would have had to do the final battle. Like, I mean, he does the final battle with the mask on, which Chuck never would have.
That's the money shot for Chuck right there.
That's the one I remember before. I was also a bit more forgiving, but only to a 4. And it's interesting you mentioned when this takes place. That was a conversation we started having before we were recording. Is, does this movie take place in the 80s or like the 60s? Like, they seem kind of out of time. I mean, today we just go with whether there's a cell phone or not. It gives you an idea whether it takes place today.
Oh, those are...
Yeah, is it a flip phone or is it a smartphone? Yeah.
That's an 80s bike that he was on.
Yeah, but it's the World War II Japanese leftover guy on the island that screws up the timeline for me. I mean, if he was a Vietnam vet, but he's from Japan, it would almost make sense. It confuses me a lot.
Well, talking about confusing, we're going to get to our next category, which is our WTF moments. So this is a moment in the movie that just makes you wonder, like, how did this happen? How, like, why is this in the movie? Takes you out of it, but in a glorious way. So, Stan, did you have a moment like that in this film?
I had several. This is where my favorite moment came up. Like, there are a few other things too. You know, like the colonel living in the mansion beside the base. You know, like the people organizing the weapons thefts, training ninjas, because that's what you do. But really, what I loved is in the main battle at the end with the Black Star Ninja going up against our American Ninja. And we saw it a lot in the 80s where ninjas had lots of great different weaponry. And he, you know, he shows his wrist and then bam, there's a gun out of his little wrist moment. But then right afterwards, he manages to shoot a laser out of his little wrist cannon thing. And the laser stays for like 20 seconds, and then it blows up a potted plant. And I just thought, wow, that's incredibly cheesy looking, but so wonderful that he has a laser attached to his wrist. I could only give it a 5, but that laser is pretty much the reason I could give it a 5.
Nick, to you.
I'm going with 5. There was a lot of crazy crap going on, but I didn't feel any of it had the impact that I want with some of this. You know, I want that, you know, pummel horse in the middle of the square being used. And on a whole, it was crazy stuff, but due to the internal logic of the movie, it almost made sense when stuff happened. You know what? It didn't even dawn on me until you guys mentioned it that they were multicolored ninjas. I just watched that movie and went, I watched that movie twice, and at no time did that strike me as remotely odd.
I think Nick, you've watched too many canon pictures. If multicolored ninjas were the rainbow ninjas, you don't find that odd.
What if those costumes are left over from a canon film where that was important to the story?
Oh, that would be great. That would be so great. If we see, oh man, that should become a modifier later on or something like that. Multicolored ninja costumes. Like, so good.
All right, I got, I wrote down Squad of Rainbow Ninjas, 5.
anything further you want to
elaborate? No, dude. Okay, well,
I have a moment that, okay, I saw this movie 100 times when I was young. I watched it twice preparing for this, and it was only on the final watching that I saw something that was magnificent. So much so, I'm going to go with a 7 on this. Okay. I'll set the stage. American Ninja and his girlfriend are out for dinner. They realize they're in the same restaurant as his mean sergeant and the evil bad guy, who are like literally like the next table over from them. They've all managed to sit down without noticing each other. And then they just notice each other. And then the sergeant and the bad guy have this discussion about whether they should throw him in the brig or what they should do with him. And then the bad guy says, I think we need to kill him. You need to take care of this, and this is what you're going to do. Hush, 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 hush. Through the entire section that the sergeant and the bad guy are making the plan to murder the American Ninja, there is a waiter standing behind them making flambé. He is making some sort of like a bananas Foster.
Bananas Foster.
He's like right next to them, making a flambé, hearing the entire plan where they're gonna murder this guy.
I'm sure that was a ninja bodyguard cook.
I bet he doesn't speak English.
Maybe he just figured that if he shut up and kept fostering those bananas, that then he'd be safe because they wouldn't notice a thing.
I,
And obviously they didn't. Oh, well, theoretically. I mean, who knows? The Black Star Ninja could have come on down and lasered his fucking ass.
Well, if you got a laser, why do you even have to do a flambe? Just fire that up.
I wonder, like, is only the Black Star Ninja able to get the laser? Or like, is there, like, the red team ninja?
You thought it was in the 60s. Laser? There's a laser!
Yeah, I mean... This could be the same thing that they want to put on, like, on Parmistan and Gymkhana.
This is the satellite station. They wanted for Parmistan. I just, like, I was near the end of the scene. I'm like, wait a minute, what's that guy doing? And I had to go back and look at the entire scene. He's making flambe. He's making, like, banana toss. It's amazing. Okay, awesome. Next.
Help is seen and not heard.
So our next category is memorable moments. So this is different than W2F. This is the hero moment. This is the line that will live in infamy. Let's start with you, Stan. Anything for this movie?
It's it's all about the laser for me. I will never not think of that when I think of American Ninja. There is, like, it's lasered, it's burned inside my mind. Just the scene, like, it's just that little bit, like, oh, the laser's popping out, it's this cheesy looking red thing, and then potted plant, go bye-bye.
You're gonna be on a game show someday and they'll say, name three traditional ninja weapons.
Yeah, and I'll be like,
well, the shuriken, for sure. The Psy, yeah. And laser, wrist laser,
and a laser. Yes.
Nick?
For me, the iconic moment was when the American Ninja makes his presence known by being all sneaky and standing on a roof and firing a warning arrow. And all the bad guys look up and go, who's that? Oh, that's the American Ninja. Kill him. Thus losing the entire element of surprise for the final battle.
I mean, he really didn't need the mask. It's like, it's not like anybody didn't know it was him. Right?
No, he fires one arrow into the ground and then fires one that is easily blocked by the tattooed faced ninja. Yeah. But he looked cool standing on the roof. With the sun coming up behind him, it was a gorgeous shot.
Yeah, I think.
So what's your score? Oh, yeah.
Score up 2.
What? 2? Jeez. This is where I think this film, this is where it excelled for me. I gave it a 7. Like, I think it had a lot of memorable moments. I mean, I like the opening for me, that was very memorable. Motorcycle car chase scene. I think that was well done. A lot of scenes that are like the obligatory fight with the guy who hates him, who ends up becoming his friend. That was tremendous. By the way, I just want to say, if you're wondering, like, at the end of every time Joe had a fight, he was sweating like crazy. In case you thought that was like an artistic special effect thing, or because these were really, really difficult fight scenes, it's actually just that Michael Dudikoff had malaria that he had contracted while he was down there. That's why he's sweaty at the end of all these scenes so much. But yeah, I just think the two fights with the head ninja, like, I think it had a lot of memorable moments as far as like creating moments that are kind of these iconic action scenes from that era.
I was a little less generous, but I did still think there was a lot of some enjoyable stuff in there. The scene that leaps out for me is the ninja showdown with the Black Star Ninja in the fountain.
Yeah,
fighting that out in the fountain. So I only gave it a 4, but I do really, really like that scene. So we're into our final category, which is a crazy concept. How out there is this idea? How mad would you have to have been to sit in a producer's office and pitch this? So Stan, let's start with you.
You know, the amount of coincidences to me in this movie are incredible. I mean, the American Ninja Sensei is the gardener for, just happens to be the gardener for the bad guy. That's lucky. You know, I mean, the ninja happens to fall for the colonel's daughter, you know, because, I mean, she's out there, so he gets to save her. And I also think it's the worst military outpost in the entire army. You know, there's just so much stuff, and the more that we talk about it, the more we just unearth a lot of stuff. So I give it a 7.
Big numbers. All right. Nick, over to you.
I'm going to go with a 5 on this one. Just 5, no explanation.
All right.
Let me give you something that's crazier. Like, I gave it a 4. Because, I mean, basically, yeah, okay, it's a guy, he has amnesia, who was trained in the martial arts, who fights a bunch of ninjas in another country. That sounds insane. But for an 80s action film, that's kind of par for the course. So, it's really not as insane a concept for the era as we'd like to say. Let me tell you something that is insane. When Chuck Norris turned this down and Dudikoff got hired, they auditioned 400 people for the role. Other reports are they auditioned 2,000 people.
Oh, God.
That's crazier than anything in the movie.
That sounds like the most Golan and Globus thing to have possibly said, is we auditioned 2,000 people to find Michael Dudikoff.
You auditioned 2,000 people and you wound up with Michael Dudikoff.
I wonder who they didn't choose.
There's a long list of people Jack, was there a lot of stuff there in the trivia about people who almost got this role?
You know what? I wish. Oh, I wish. I've heard some great. I'm sure there's some other people. I just didn't. I didn't see it. There was one, but not somebody that I knew. But apparently, some people did, so it was in there. But yeah, I didn't write it down because I don't know it. His name.
I really hope Johnny Depp got.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. He was too busy starting, what was it, Private Resort or something like that about now? About this era?
Had he even gone to Jump Street with this?
No, he would have been in that Private Resort, that sex comedy B movie that he was in at this era. Where he and
we'll get there.
Yeah, I hope.
All right, I actually had a similar feeling to Jack that this, that in the... In the offices of Canon in the mid-1980s, if you sat down and said it's an American who's also a ninja on an army base, they would have gone, okay, that makes good sense.
Yeah,
they would have said, but what's the twist?
Exactly.
So I gave it a 5. It's wacky, but in the context of the era, I don't think it's like super duper wacky. So that brings us to the totals. The host here that enjoyed it the most, I think, is no big surprise. That's Jack. Gave it a 27 out of 50. I'm next with 26 out of 50. And then Stan and Nick come in quite a bit lower. So that gives me a grand total out of 100. And we have 6 secret modifiers. So these are 6 things that we will mess with the score with. Pluses and minuses as we go through the season. And this week, American Ninja loses a point for having a fairly wide theatrical release. Since we are searching for the ultimate B movie, American Ninja playing on 672 screens qualifies as a fairly wide release in the context of what we're talking about. So loses a point there, giving us a grand total of 47.
It was directed by Sam Fischenberg. Can we give it a positive? Because this guy also directed Breakin' 2 Electric Boogaloo.
He gets an asterisk.
Yeah, so, okay. We're going to give it a final score, 47.5 asterisks.
Okay, perfect.
You know, I have to say, I am loving these modifiers. Because after we came up with them, I completely forgot what they are. So it's like a game show every episode.
Oh, there's so much. These movies give back in so many ways for us, and it really is. you know, it is one of the highlights of my week to get together and discuss them and also to watch them. I mean, you know, don't forget the watching them part. That goes
I can't wait for us to shut up so I can go watch some more. Let's get on. Let's do that.
All right. Well, I gotta let everybody know about the movie that's coming up. And that one is King of the Kickboxers 2, American Shaolin. And I believe that it's just mostly known as American Shaolin. And this one is a doozy. So I'm really looking forward to talking about that. So, Jim, why don't you tell me, tell us all about the Instagram?
That's right. We are on Instagram at Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo, and use that same hashtag and talk about your favorite B movies, low budget, independent, grindhouse, drive-in, whatever your era, whatever your thing is. And tag us. We'd love to hear what you're enjoying.
All right. Well, unless anybody has anything else to say, for Jim, Jack, Nick, and of course Brad, who's not here, I'm 8th Dan Stan, and this is Kung Fu Electric Boogaloo!